Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 224, the Dark Master Edition. Yes, I have a new Dark Master in my life, and it is espresso. It's kind of wonderful and fun, but you're going to hear more about that in just a little bit. This is a great day, great weekend. Everything's just going good. Everything's, flowing correctly in the juices of the Caffeination headquarters over here. I mean, everything's just nice and fun. I got to say, we have a great show lined up for you today. Lots of interesting news. We have stuff about espresso, noobs, tips, the grid itself, Big Brother, patches, and of course, coffee. So it's a whole bunch of different interesting topics, I think, that all kind of meld together and create what is the Caffeination podcast. If you're wondering, if you don't know where this show actually lives, it lovingly resides over at www.caffeination.com. Coincidentally enough, that would be caffeination.com, which is kind of good because that's the name of the podcast. But, you know, it's not just that. It's not just the podcast that lives over there. We also have almost daily blog postings. The only day you're not going to see a new blog posting or content coming out on the website is usually Saturday. Every once in a while, I'll drop in, find something really interesting that I just have to tell you, and that'll come out. But yeah, you know, usually there's not too much going on the ways on Saturday. It's kind of a family day most of the time. However, the Caffeination Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. All the other member shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content. And you know what? We agreed as well. That's why we're a part of the thing. Every once in a while, I realize I kind of mess up the way it's supposed to sound, but you know, it's a really good organization of shows that have all agreed to create, you know, child safe content, so you can listen to this stuff in the car with your kids and not worry about what kind of content's going to be coming through the speakers. And you can find out more about what all those shows are over at techpodcasts.com. We're also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network, that's Blubrry, and the show is a Puzzle Piece production. To find out more about what that means, head on over to puzzlepiecepro.com. And that's eventually going to be changing. There's a couple different tweaks and things that are happening over there, so we're going to be getting all the information and everything up to code and up to snuff on that as well. Like I said, there's a whole bunch of really fun stuff to talk to you about today on the Caffeination. I am jazzed beyond belief right now, not just about all the great stuff we have, but we had my family birthday party this past Saturday, yesterday as the case may be, and one of the presents I received from my parents was actually an espresso machine. And I had asked for it. Nobody understands why I asked for it. And everybody says, but you have a coffee maker. It's just not the same thing. It's like specialty coffee. I need to find a good analogy, a good metaphor for exactly the difference between the two. But if you look over at the caffeination.com, the tiny little mug's actually a little shot glass for the Philadelphia Flyers. By the way, since it's playoff hockey season, I am absolutely in love with TV right now. So, but that's all off to the side. Before we get too far into the episode, I did want to talk to you just a little bit about our sponsor. When you meet with colleagues or clients in person, you end up spending a fortune on gas or airfare, or waste your time in airports, hotels, and, you know, traffic. It's horrible. All that waste, and it's only a two-hour meeting. This problem will not trouble you any longer. Just do more and travel less. Hold a meeting online from your computer with GoToMeeting. Everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com during your conference call and sees your computer desktop on their monitors. Get more done in less time without the hassle of driving or flying. Try GoToMeeting free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, just visit www.GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts for your free 30-day trial today. We'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination, and they allow us to do all kinds of fun stuff, and they allow us to, you know, buy new coffee and buy interesting stuff, to keep the podcast up and running. I was recently asked, you know, why did you monetize your podcast? Well, basically, the only reason that I honestly monetize the podcast is not because I'm looking to retire on this, although if, you know, all of a sudden I start getting tons of listeners and everything, you know, and can't even deal with the downloads and have to buy, like, a server farm, hey, that'd be great. And, you know, pass it along to your friends, please. But at the same point in time, all I really wanted for it, and the only reason I accepted sponsorships and stuff like that, was to allow the podcast to pay for itself. So it's done that. It's allowed us to keep the podcast going, and you know, it's a really great hobby. It's a really great business at the same point in time. And, you know, I love doing this. I hope the passion for the topics and everything that I'm talking to you about actually goes on over into the content and see in how you're hearing us. But and another thing I'm really passionate about is helping other people in a different and what I think is a new way. So, you know, 2 days from now, we have April 15th. Everybody's dreading it. You know, it's tax day. You know, you have to pay your dues to the government at that day. So what I came up with was a concept 3 years ago. So every April 15th is Adopt a Noob Day. Basically, the idea that everybody out there who's even the slightest bit technologically inclined, you owe that knowledge to somebody, whether it was somebody in a classroom as a teacher, whether it was the guy sitting next to you in class, or whether it was, you know, the young kid around the block who showed you how to program your VCR. Some small little bit of tech knowledge. I'm just asking you to take a moment on that day and pass the knowledge along, to take a second and say, you know what, today I'm gonna, you know, be a little bit more patient with the users. I'm gonna be a little bit more understanding of the people who don't necessarily understand technology. I'm gonna go out of my way, and I'm extending it to, you know, if you just do something for somebody, they're not gonna understand. But if you take that extra time, if you take that extra moment, and you teach a man to tech, so that's what Adopt a Noob Day is all about. We're gonna be dedicating a lot of the different articles this week to different forms of help. Do different things that we can hopefully pass along to you, and hopefully you'll enjoy it. But there's a whole bunch of interesting stuff over at caffeination.com that you're going to see. And then the next little thing that we have up here is actually something that I owe directly to one of my teachers in middle school. I have this really weird habit. I don't know if anybody else out there has it. I don't fidget the way normal people do. Normal people, they fidget. They, you know, they're playing with papers, they're tapping pencils, they're doing all this other stuff. I make things when I fidget. So if I'm working on a server in work, or if I'm waiting for something to reboot, I need something to keep my hands busy. And I had a teacher in middle school who was fantastic. Her name was Mrs. Harper, and she said, you know, you need to find some place to put your nervous energy. Find or make a fidget, she said to me. It has to be small, light, and silent, because I was making a lot of noise with papers and everything. So I started making things, you know, out of the debris that was around the office. And since I've been working in computers, one of the things that we have around the office all the times is the leftover ends from cables. So, you know, if I made an Ethernet cable or something like that and it didn't quite work out, I had cut the end off and I was letting them sit there. So while I was waiting for a server to install one day, I turned it into a little bug. And now I have about 5 or 6 of them in work. I think I have 4 or 5 of them at home. And everybody seems to really like them. But lately, you know, through the confluence of different social media applications, specifically Twitter and Twitcher, which is TWITXR. It's basically Twitter for pictures. So you take pictures with your cell phone and then you send it to this email address, and then it automatically posts it on like 9 different things. So, you know, while I've been waiting to do things recently, I've been arranging little scenes and little dioramas with the with the computer bugs and taking pictures. So some of them have reached some kind of acclaim. I got a lot of positive responses from the bugs having a little board meeting and a little business card with a graph on there. So just head on over there and check that out. But it's also kind of talking, that article is basically talking about the way that I see 2008 shaping up. I really see that this is going to be the year where, even though you have, you know, your Facebook account, your MySpace account, your Twitter account, your Jaiku, your Pounce, and all the other things out there, you know, it's really going to all start to come together. There's already a bunch of applications like Plaxo Pulse and FriendFeed and a couple other things that are starting to make being a social media butterfly that much simpler. They're starting to do cross-platform posting to help you out with things like that. So it's going to be kind of fun, kind of interesting to see exactly where that goes. I mean, before, if I wanted to upload the same picture, you know, the same picture of my goofy little bug to something, I would have to download it off my cell phone or send it to Verizon, then download it off the Verizon network, or, you know, pull it off my computer, send it to Flickr, send it to, you know, a link to where I uploaded it to my website, and then, you know, there's a whole bunch of other different things. But now, just by sending an email from my phone, I can automatically post it to Flickr, automatically have it send out as a Twitter, as a tweet, so people can see it, and get responses and get, you know, feedback back within like 3 minutes. I mean, it's unbelievable. We have a lot of real news bites today. We have a bunch of tech cruft and some interesting, and hopefully you'll find it fun, caffeine and food section stuff at the end of the show. A lot of personal experiences, a lot of fun things that have happened with that. So hopefully you'll bear with us for the caffeine and food. I don't do a lot of personal stories usually, because Some people do and don't like them, but I just thought that, you know, this would be kind of fun for today. But up first, we have a bunch of really interesting and somewhat hard-hitting real news bites. First up here is, do you want a really real big dose of reality? I mean, I'm talking completely serious now. Everybody's out there, oh, you know, it's so easy to get your identity stolen. You know, we need to watch hackers. You need to watch the peer-to-peer networks. There's file sharing. There's all these other horrible things that are happening online. Gamers are cracking things. And, you know, they're talking about, like, these tiny, and when you really consider them in the grand scope of things, very minute problems. Here's a problem that stretches beyond everything. There was a conference recently where they were talking about security. The RSA an RSA audience was listening to a presenter talk about it. And basically, a penetration testing team, a team who gets paid to break into things, was able to break into the computers that run the power grid in less than a day. Yeah, I'm going to let that sink in for just a half a second. So, you have your file sharing, you have your people, you know, putting out the latest Britney Spears album on BitTorrent and stuff like that, and that gets all the media attention. I have not heard one thing this entire week. I mean, despite the media's love of fear-mongering and everything else like that, I have not heard one thing about this, and this was posted on April 10th. So it's 3 days, you know, it's the entire weekend that this was posted since it was posted on Slashdot. Still haven't heard anything. This is one of those things where it's kind of like security at nuclear power plants, the ability to have a secure power grid so that nobody else from the outside could hack in and shut off things. Yes, they used social engineering, which is basically they talked people into doing things. And I got to tell you that the most vulnerable point of any system is the people who are running it. People, by and large, are not as vigilant as they should be. And with that as an understanding, when something as mission critical as power, you know, you'd kind of want to make sure that the people themselves have such a limited interaction with the actual operating and maintenance of it that it would take several of them together being incredibly stupid for something to happen. And first of all, I don't know if the systems are actually online, but I would think this would be probably a very good excuse to have a closed-loop system to where you would actually have to be on site to work on them. And yeah, I know that that's a huge problem for a lot of IT infrastructures where they say, well, you know, you'd like to have the ability to work on them remotely. Yeah, you'd like to, but for certain things, it's probably not the best idea. I mean, that's just my opinion. I'm really open to discussion on this, just wondering. But I mean, that was a very sobering article. I mentioned it in one of my previous posts this week, but it really bears repeating. This is the kind of thing that needs media attention. This needs to, you know, I don't know what can be done, but hopefully by calling out the industries like this, you know, we can start to see cracks in the armor and people start to relent and say, you know what, we really do need to actually pay attention to what these hackers and what these, you know, people of both black and white hats are able to do. And with that being said, the armed forces in general are sort of taking that into account. They're basically saying computer geeks may or may not be able to, you know, be all they can be in the traditional army sense of things. You know, they might not be able to, for instance, let's just say in the broadest sense of terms, be able to pass the physical, although I do know a lot of very, very fit geeks. I know a lot of people who are, you know, not only geeks in mind, but also fitness geeks at the same point in time. They're also very aware of how their body functions, and they like to have the body functioning at peak efficiency. So should any of these people wish to enter into the armed forces, I'm pretty sure all of them will be able to withstand the rigors of doing so. However, I do know a significant amount of incredibly intelligent people and incredibly skilled people who are not capable of doing those things. Myself probably included. I mean, some of that stuff, you know, I could probably do most of it, but maybe not the running 15 miles and stuff like that. I don't know, but it's kind of interesting to see the shift in the paradigm shift in the way that people are thinking about how they want to do security. And the funny thing is the armed forces are probably about 10 years behind businesses. Businesses have long thought of saying, oh my God, this guy's a hacker, this guy has a criminal record. Yeah, but you do realize that if you hire this guy, he's going to know so much more than your standard garden variety person coming out of college. He has not only knowledge, you know, from books, which he probably does, and it's probably all self-taught. But he also has knowledge of the way you get into things. You know, penetration testing, which is what we talked about in the last article, isn't just, you know, guys who go out there and they read books on how you're supposed to break into machines. No, these are, for the most part, these are guys who either got caught breaking into machines or guys who never got caught and are just that good. And the idea behind most altruistic hacking is to be able to show people, hey, there are chinks in your armor here, here, and here. You're going to want to fix that. So these are the kind of people that the Army and the armed forces in general are starting to try and, you know, kind of pick apart and say, you know, we would like these people to become part of it. You know, we don't want to just simply have, you know, mercenaries for hire. We don't want to just simply pick, you know, people as civilian contractors. We want them to be part of the armed forces lifestyle. And it's really kind of, I think it's a liberating idea, and I think it's a concept that is long since overdue for kind of, you know, more detailed looking into. Let's see. All right. The next little thing, last little thing we have in the Real News Bites section here at the Caffeination Podcast today is Microsoft, just a general security report that I found over at Ars Technica, and I got to tell you, this is probably one of the most interesting reports because they're talking about software vulnerabilities. So basically when there's a news story that comes out or something that comes across one of the different bug tracking lists that appear online, say, okay, you know, there was this many vulnerabilities in the latest version of Internet Explorer. You know, from the time when a vulnerability is discovered until the time that a patch is released to fix the vulnerability, the best is Microsoft. That's correct. Microsoft has the shortest time span in between, the shortest average time from when a problem is released to when a problem is fixed. And I really think that, you know, they deserve kudos for this. I mean, that's one of the most lauded problems with Microsoft is that, oh my God, look at all these problems with it. The funny thing is, the second closest was Red Hat, and they're much more of a, they are mostly an open source community. I'm pretty sure that, you know, the corporate interests do still control a lot of the releases for patches and stuff. So they're the second one. But here's the order of magnitude that we're talking about, okay? From July, rather, to December in 2007, the average time for Microsoft to release from 0 day to the day when it was fixed was 6 days. That is still an eternity when it comes to computer services and computer security, but still incredibly quick when you think about the amount of computers that are affected by any problem that touches Microsoft. Tons and tons of people who would be affected, you know, both negatively and positively if this patch does anything to anything else within the entire operating system. So 6 days is insane to have that level of security and that level of understanding of a problem and be able to fix it. The next closest during that time period was Red Hat with 32 days. The one after that is HP with 59 days. So 2 months almost. Apple comes in fourth, and there were only five vendors discussed here with 79 days. So 2.5 months, and you have your fix from Apple. But the thing that I don't understand about the Apple and how long it takes them to put the patches out there is not just because their install base is so much smaller than Microsoft when you compare it, because Microsoft still has like 90% of the world's PC market, personal computer, and Apple has probably like 5-7%. So it's a significant difference here in size and order of magnitude. But at the same point in time, you're looking at it and you're going, okay, you make the operating system and you make the hardware. You know, you these things are very, very much married together. So does it mean that when there's a problem, it takes you that much longer because you're responsible for the hardware at the same point in time? So, I mean, you know, we recently saw that, you know, the MacBook Air hack, you know, the pwn-to-own was, you know, kind of revealing. But the funny thing is, I don't think they've released the patch for that yet. However, on the Vista side, the third-party software, the Adobe Flash Player that was actually compromised that allowed them to gain access to the Vista machine, that's already been patched. That was patched last week. The contest was held like 2.5 weeks ago. So they had roughly, I'd say, 7 to 10 days after the thing. And this isn't just Microsoft. This is working with Adobe to patch something on a Microsoft system. The Apple patch, as far as I know, has not been released yet. So we're still over 2 weeks with that. But then again, they have like 60 more days before they're over their time limit. Oh, by the way, the fifth one up there, the company that says Sun runs the internet, you know, this is a hardware company that a lot of people who are not intimately familiar with high-end hardware do not know. Sun Computer Systems. They've written their own operating system, they have their own hardware, and they're also very active in the open source community, and I'm pretty sure that when they're talking about Sun, they're only talking about Solaris, which is their operating system specifically. They're not talking about the open source version, which is Susie or Suzy, depending on how you pronounce it. I know if I'm going over your head with this, but the lead time to get a problem fixed for that is 157 days, almost 6 months. That is insane. That is way over what it should be. I do have to say, though, that HP and Sun had about 110 days in the first half of 2007. But it's just still kind of interesting, and the other people kept generally around the same time. But there was other stuff that they talked about in the article. For instance, you know, the percentage of attacks that went out for each one, and the percentage of attacks that were browser-based versus client-side versus server. So basically, to break it down for those of you who don't understand, browser means it's located within the program. The attack was based on whatever was in the program that you're using to surf the internet. So Internet Explorer, Mozilla Firefox, Safari if you're on a Mac, Opera, or AOL if you're still on that. Client-side, which means that the software is on your computer. Server-side means the software is on whatever computer you're talking to. And local means that it's a problem, you know, like plugging a USB drive in or something. And then there's other. For most of the Microsoft and HP stuff, it's all browser-based. For Sun, it's almost all browser-based. For Apple, it's kind of client-side, so it's a lot of the problems that are stuff that, like third-party applications probably, that are installed on the machine. But it's interesting to see the different breakdowns, and really, if you have a second, and even you don't have to understand what all the problems are, you know, what all the different things mean. You just need to run down and just take a look at some of the statistics. It's really, really interesting. Then they talk about data breaches in different realms of computing. You know, financial industry, healthcare industry, government, and education. Relatively even, you know, between 20% and 15% between all of them. Healthcare and financial had 15% and 16% respectively, and the others had around 20% to 25% between them. So that's kind of interesting. You know, it opens up a different little world into what computer security in the landscape looks like. So just wanted to pass that on. I know it's a little bit long, and we're hopefully not going to talk about that kind of stuff too often, but I just want to kind of bring that information to light, and hopefully you found it interesting. That about wraps up the Real News Bites section. We now have our Tech Cruft section, which is all the fun, different, interesting little things that I found online. And this section usually goes by really, really quickly. And then we're going to head on into the caffeine and food section. First up, there's a light-emitting wallpaper that runs... they're going to say it runs your lamps right out of a job. So basically, this is a wall covering that you would put up, and it has different little electroluminescent panels within it. And it's all very artsy, and there's like a vector tree art that has a bird flying through the air, and it's all luminescent. So basically, imagine some kind of funky design on your walls, and the walls themselves glow. I mean, that's really cool, and it's really kind of interesting, but they were saying, yeah, you do care about resale value, right? And yeah, most people do, but the funny thing that I could see this turning into, and kind of, you know, a little bit off to the side, but instead of having, you know, like a very hard and fast, hard-lined design that's in the wall, what about having the walls themselves just have like a faint, dull glow, kind of like an indirect lighting solution? I think that would be much more of an interesting thing to see. And I also wonder how green this is. I wonder how much the technology is actually drawing on power all the time. So, kind of fun, kind of interesting. Up next, there's a video linked over at Engadget to console modder extraordinaire one, Benjamin Heck, the guy who did the one-handed controller among many other awesome things. There's video and all other kinds of links to his recent mod of a PlayStation 3 laptop. This thing is gorgeous. It is a level of artistry and level of skill that I don't think is human. And Engadget, of course, commissioned the piece, paid Ben, and they're going to be auctioning it off for a charity next week, so you really, really have to check this out. I mean, it just looks gorgeous. That's over at Engadget.com. Next little thing that we have up here is actually not particularly disposable, but these are called smart sticky notes. So these are post-it notes for the new generation. Imagine a post-it note with an alarm on it. Yeah, these things have the ability to... You can set a date and a time, days, times, and when you'd like to be alerted. You can have a one tiny little strip on it that you can write something, and then you just stick it on your wall the same as you would any other note. However, when that date and time comes up, it starts to flash, and it beeps, so it'll let you know. I mean, this is really cool. This is the kind of thing that could take sticky notes into the next generation here. This is, you know, it breaks down what people had thought about them before and kind of, you know, brings a whole new paradigm to that as well. So I thought it was kind of fun. Thought it was kind of interesting. Another little thing to point out, as of February 17th, 2009, the TVs will no longer be able to receive the normal over-the-air television transmissions. That being said, Best Buy, Walmart, and all the other major stores that are out there were recently slapped with a $6.6 million fine because they're still selling the old TVs without the converter boxes, without the federally mandated warning. So if you're in the market for a TV and it doesn't have a digital tuner, you do want to see if it will be able to receive a signal after the fact. They're saying, you know, it's only going to affect the people who still get their TV, you know, the rabbit ears or the antenna on your roof or something like that. That's what this really affects. All right, next up, the interesting little thing that came out. Everybody now has those curly little CFLs in their house, the beautifully designed new light bulbs that are very efficient. You know, they last like 10 times longer than the standard incandescent. The only problem is, big problem, it's the Simpsons and the sprinkles are also a cursed kind of thing here. They contain high levels of mercury when compared to other light bulbs out there. That's bad. So they are gorgeous, they are very useful, and they're very environmentally conscious until it comes time to dispose of them. Then you need to do that very safely. There's going to be repositories where you can place these things, like at Home Depot and other stuff like that, and you have free drop-offs for old used ones. But the new kid on the block, the high-brightness LEDs, are going to be safer, more efficient than CFLs. So no word yet on how much more expensive than these things are, but the only problem is they're ugly. They're not very pretty when it comes to, I mean, incandescent bulbs are very standard. The CFLs kind of got onto the market because they're very, very attractive looking. They have a neat way of looking about them. But the light was never true. It didn't look exactly like the incandescent light is. Well, they were able to tweak the LEDs to actually mimic the way an incandescent light looks and allow it to be brighter and much more natural of a lighting. So that's kind of cool and kind of interesting to see how that comes down the pike. As soon as we find out exactly how much that stuff's going to cost, we'll pass that along to you as well. The next little thing out there was a fun little bit of geek jewelry. Just some people who've been making some funny. If you ever saw those old jewelry making kits where they were the little plastic circles and then you melted them all together, this woman's making interesting little geek themed ones like cassette recorders, phonographs, and diskette drives. So I just thought I'd pass that along to you. Just thought it was kind of cool and interesting at the same point in time. All right. Next up, we have our fun caffeine and food section. So I wanted to kind of play around with this, tell you about some neat stuff. First off, we have a fun little link from over at Trend Hunter, the coffee maker boom boxes. Yeah, you heard me correctly. This is an interesting little concept. I don't know how much I would actually use something like this. Probably not very much at all. But it appears to be a single-serve coffee thing, kind of like the espresso or the Senseo machines that are out there. But it seems to be kind of cheesy in that sense, but it also allows you to hook your iPod into it. What doesn't allow you to hook an iPod into it at this point in time? And it is an espresso machine. But I don't know exactly how good it's going to be, but it has its own little quirks. And that being said, I have a new machine, a new toy. It's the, I'm going to mispronounce it, it's like a DeLonghi espresso machine that my parents bought me for my birthday. I love this thing. The only problem is that the space in between the spigot where the espresso comes out and the grate is a little small, so I can only put a shot glass in, or I can put a bigger cup if I remove the grate. But that's fine. I'm all well and good. It was the right price. It was everything. It was just it was a present for my birthday. I cannot believe how happy I am to have this, and it's really my new Dark Master. It's the new thing that I'm so excited about in coffee. I still love my Cuisinart grind and brew. I still love coffee of all different stripes, but you know, the espresso is just a completely different animal. I swear, the first time I made a true shot of espresso out of this, I ripped the carpet out in my son's the third bedroom that's upstairs in our room, and put it outside, and I was like, you know what, that thing gave me a little bit too much energy. I need to calm down. I had already already had like a full cup of coffee, or, you know, like a giant mug of coffee rather, and had made a shot of espresso just because I could, and downed it, and it was actually a double shot at that point in time, and I was like, wow, I have way too much energy, I'm incredibly busy, nothing to do, so... It's just kind of fun. The only problem was I ended up becoming the party barista because, first of all, I wanted to show this thing off. I wanted to make all different kinds of drinks for everybody. I wanted to make everybody cappuccinos and shots of espresso. And it was very cool. The only problem is it's very labor intensive to do it, and I should have been much more of a party host as opposed to a barista. So it was kind of cool, but at the same point in time, I need to kind of temper that for the future. You know, when dessert comes around, I'll be doing that from now on, not necessarily when people are showing up and trying to eat the pizza. But the only other thing that I've been thinking about is because we keep gathering all this coffee making equipment, and there's not a lot of place to put it. So right now the espresso machine's under the counter, and when I want it, I pull it out and, you know, put it there. The Cuisinart grinder brew still has the place of honor upon the countertop, first of all because it matches all the other kitchen appliances, I've been told. I don't care so much about how they match. I care about their function. The problem is, a lot of guys have, you know, bars in their basement and stuff like that. And I realized, you know, I would eventually like to have a bar in my basement. The only thing is, I would probably have a coffee bar. So it'd be like a wet bar and there'd be alcohol and other things. But I'd also have a section completely dedicated to just making coffee. I'd have like a good grinder when I actually get one of them. I'd have the filtered water coming out of the tap. I'd have my espresso machine or whatever one I have at that point. I'd have the coffee maker. I'd have, you know, the coffee stored. The sad thing is I can see it all coming together right now. And then the last little thing I wanted to end out with, I would just, you know, wonder, since we're talking about the adopt a noob stuff, before I get onto my last little rant, and that's just going to be a touch on, and then we're going to talk about something else, but take you on out of the show here. But the last little thing I wanted to kind of put out there, if any of you out there who are drinking espresso or anything, now, the first question I'm always asked is, do you need special beans for it? Well, you need good quality coffee, and it's usually a dark roasted beans, but otherwise it's relatively the same coffee that you would use for coffees, and that's what I've been told so far. So please, if I'm wrong, correct me. Somebody please email in. I know that we have a couple people who listen who are very much into espresso as opposed to coffee. So if you have any tips or tricks that you'd like to share with the group, yeah, please feel free to call in 215-240-1319 or Skype The Caffeination and leave a message. We have voicemail and all that stuff set up. We're opening up the floor to any and all settings and recommendations that anybody might have. Compared to some of the machines that are out there, I've seen like $600 or $700 espresso machines in people's houses. You know, this is not high end, but it allows me to steam the milk. It allows me to, you know, do my shot of espresso or double shot, and it's just incredibly fun so far. So hey, anybody who has any suggestions, I'd be glad to hear them. And the last little thing I wanted to put out there is kind of I was working on a list of suggestions recently, and one of the things that came across, and I saw a bunch of advertisements for it because it's starting to get warm out now, is for iced coffee. I got to tell you, I hate the iced coffee stuff that is out right now. The McDonald's, the Dunkin' Donuts, the Starbucks, everybody has the same junk. It's milk and coffee. It's like cold brewed coffee that already has the cream built into it. It's basically an iced latte. It is not an iced coffee. Iced coffee consists of two ingredients, both of which are in the title of the drink. It is ice, it is coffee. That is it. There's no sugar, there's no milk, there's no nothing. If you didn't ask for it and it's not in there, you know, I get so irritated going to some of these places. You know, through drive-thru, I actually had an argument last year with a woman who worked at Dunkin' Donuts. I said, I'd like an iced coffee, but could you do me a favor? Just take a cup of coffee, take a nice cup of tall black coffee, and pour ice into it. Just make it with the ice in the glass. That's all I'm asking for. I just want ice and coffee because it really cools me off on a nice hot day. That's all I'm asking for. And she refused to do it, so I had to order a cup of ice and a tall coffee. So I'm sitting I actually had to order a water and a coffee. Drink the water and then put the coffee into it. So it's just please, a little truth in advertising. If it's iced coffee, make it ice and coffee. If it's an iced latte, I'm perfectly fine with that. Some milk-based coffee beverage, go for it. Just call it as such. That being said, I'm going to stop recording here. I'd like to thank everybody for listening to this, the Caffeination Podcast. This has been a fun little episode. Hopefully you enjoyed the personal touch at the end. We're not going to be doing that entirely too often. But like I said, Hope you enjoyed it. Again, this has been the Caffeination Podcast, located lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. We are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. All the other member shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content, and they all live over at techpodcasts.com. We're also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network and a proud Puzzle Piece production. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. Stay caffeinated, people.